This is Dennis Michelson, D. Mike. Welcome to the Data Lab. This is where all the hard work gets done in crunching stats so we can hopefully make you a better fantasy football player this season. And joining me in the Data Lab, hey, he's the scientist that does most of the number crunching for us. It's the Professor John Bush. John, welcome back.
Hey, Dennis. We're hot and heavy in the data cave here. I come out, see the sunlight. I saw my shadow, so I got to keep working till September. So the data groundhog says, get back to work, Bush. So I will.
There you go. And there are so many terms in fantasy football they get glossed over, and people make these raw assumptions based on what they saw one particular year in their history of following fantasy football. And I can understand how that can happen if you're relatively new to the sport. If you've only been playing fantasy football 3 or 4 or 5 years, you will see something and you'll think, oh, this is how the game is changing. And you will make the assumption. But those of us who have been doing this for over 30 years, we look at that and we say, okay, well, this particular thing reminds me of the 2007 season where this went kind of wacky and this was different. And then in 2008, it went back to being the same old, same old. And one of the places that I think that sort of theory applies is I see so many people talking about vacated targets. We got Davante Adams leaving Green Bay. We got Tyreek Hill leaving the Kansas City Chiefs. And we have Amari Cooper leaving the Dallas Cowboys. And if you believe the vacated target group, it's like one player is going to get all of these vacated targets. And in many cases, he's not the same position as the vacated targets. And I just don't think vacated targets works quite that clean and simple.
So if you think about that, and that's what I've been doing my lessons, and they're available at scienceoffantasyfootball.com. And you can see that I'm on the journey to try to understand what are normal changes year to year. In other words, when people talk about vacated targets, are they talking about 100 targets, 50 targets? In other words, what is abnormal? What is normal just year-to-year fluctuation? I don't see any of that discussed in any of these kind of, you know, equations or whatever they're trying to allow us to believe. They don't know. In my opinion, until they try to say, well, vacated target is this. Nobody even has a definition for what a vacated target means. Is that it's kind of like a piece of pie. Is it you can cut it differently, or is the pie getting smaller or bigger? And I'm just not sure it's the same. You could imagine that. There are some models. In science, we have models. One model would say that if the team loses Tyreek Hill, then those targets are gone, that they will never have that again. Kansas City will just have to get along without his targets. So it's kind of a nothing happens. You know, there is no vacated targets. We split. It's just the team loses that many targets. Another one might be that the wide receivers share. Is it one person? Is it two? How is that decided? Is that so-called hot hand? Does the coach make that decision? You know, if Tyreek left 200 targets, do they split them up? Okay, you know, in the huddle, okay, you're getting before the game. I mean, how do they – it's like a deck of cards. How do they deal that out? Does the tight end get more, maybe? Does the running backs get more? Is there a game plan, or is it just how it is? Does the quarterback have to run more now because he doesn't have that, you know, alpha dominant wide receiver out there? So there's, you can see all the possibilities. The tight end gets a lot. The running back gets a lot. The wide receivers get a lot. Nobody gets nothing. That's another model. The quarterback runs extra. So I could see about five extreme models, and then you would probably assume it's going to be a blending of that, maybe. You know, that, okay, a 200 targets. So it's kind of like, you know, candy you're throwing out to the kids at a parade, a little bit here, a little bit there. And, you know, how can you make that prediction? If I'm selling clicks to my website, I'm not going to tell any kind of story like that. That's too scary. I'm going to be very definite. His 200 targets are going to Juju Smith, and that is it. End of story. Come let me read my article, get my clicks, and, you know, I'll make it winner. Come on down.
And this is the one. This is exactly what I'm talking about with the Green Bay Packers. So
yeah,
Devontae Adams leaves and other guys leave and all this. And, you know, magically you end up with 231 vacated targets or whatever the number is. And people are assuming that a half of those, they're making assumptions, and they're even saying things like, well, if half of those vacated targets from Devontae Adams end up going to Aaron Jones, oh my goodness, Aaron Jones is going to have a field day because his catch rate percentage is 80%. So 100 targets added means 80 more receptions. It's not how math works. It's not how vacated targets work. And I also see, this is my other favorite one. Well, in the 7 games over the last 3 years that Devontae Adams has not played, Aaron Jones's targets per game went up by 4.3 a game. Yes, they did. That's fact. We can look at the game splits, and we could say, yes, these are the increases that we had. But when a guy gets hurt mid-season, especially if a guy gets hurt late in the week after they've already game-planned everything for him, if a player gets hurt, he's gone, and they don't have another player that they can necessarily bring in from another team that's even close to his caliber. But when a player leaves a team at the end of the year, it's a whole lot different because a team can bring in fresh bodies. And no, there isn't another Devontae Adams necessarily that they can bring in that is as good as Devontae Adams. But sometimes when you bring 3 different wide receivers who are all average to above average in the job that they do in the NFL, now you've given the quarterback more opportunities to throw that ball to different people. So now instead of one player getting 50% of those targets, maybe it gets split 20% between 3 of the new players, 2 of the existing players. Maybe the tight end gets more. Maybe there's just fewer pass plays because they change the offense around and go run first. And then upon all of that, how does the defense play this team now? If the defense was double teaming or trying to double team Devontae Adams in the past, but they were still able to script him open by using like a legal pick play or putting him in motion and trying to disrupt the defense in some way to still get their main guy open despite the defense trying to take him out of the game, now the defense does not have to play a specialty defense to try to limit one player. Now they can just limit the quarterback. So does that all of a sudden change the way you defense a team instead of double teaming and just trying to take that guy out of the game with coverage? Do you now put more quarterback pressure on to try to negate that quarterback throwing to his new people? How does that affect the target share? There are so many moving parts on a football team on the offense alone that those targets are not guaranteed to go to anybody. And targets are earned. If you're not a good wide receiver, you're not going to get more targets simply because the starting wide receiver is gone. If you're a great running back at grabbing catches out of the backfield, you're not necessarily going to get more targets because the defense knows you're really good at catching the ball. So now instead of taking Davante Adams out of the game by double-teaming him and leading to a lot of check-down throws to the running back, now they take the running back out of the game. Or if they put more pressure on the quarterback, then the running back has to stay in to pick up the blitz. There's so many changes. This is not playing checkers. This is playing three-dimensional chess, and you get to have the defense changing how they attack on any given play. So it's not going to be stable across all 60 plays that an offense is going to get that day. So it's always a game of evolving and changing, and I just don't think it's that simple. Pull one guy out, and one guy magically gets a majority of the targets.
I pulled up Green Bay looking at the team level. Last year, the running backs actually had 9 less targets from 2021 versus 2020. So they actually went down 9. The tight end was about exactly the same. And the running backs went up 78. And you're saying, well, okay. So the proportion for 9 years, Green Bay has been about 19%, 18%, and 63% to the RB, tight end, and wide receiver. So they've always been kind of biased to the wide receiver anyway. So if you believe in the targets, then why is Alan Lazard at 131 ADP? Christian Watson at 160, Sammy Watkins is 228, and the Cobb is a free square. So I see Jones at 17 and Dylan at 58. Tanyan, he's at 161. You would think if those targets are going somewhere, is it just the way the public looks at it? I'm predicting they all think it's Aaron Jones by the ADP. And there's no evidence through the ADP that they are, you know, thinking Lazard or Watson or Watkins is going to collect any. But Green Bay always does, their median is close to 360 targets. So I don't know what they're going to game plan for this year, but we've never had this year that didn't have Davante Adams. So I don't know what they're going to scheme. And I don't know. I'd have to look all the way back to see what year Davante Adams started picking it up. But I'm not sure. I would have to look way back, and the coaches have changed. Who knows what's going to happen? I don't think in a system that it's you're able to predict things. System predictions are hard to do. It's our economy is a system. Right. If it's so easy to figure out, then there'd be a lot more millionaires and billionaires. There's only what, about 1%? If it was that easy, we'd all be living high on the hog, but that's not the case.
And some teams, the changes end up making sense at the end of the year.
Yeah, at the end of the year.
But if you're looking at those players that made those changes happen. For instance, Atlanta last year, losing Calvin Ridley in the middle of the first part of the season, and all of a sudden, your best wide receiver is gone. Absolutely gone. And you don't have the cap space money to bring anybody in, so you're talking about replacing him with just the players that are on the field. And we saw Cordarrelle Patterson's targets go up through the roof,
yep.
And he gets called a running back. But Cordarrelle Patterson wears number 84 for a reason. He's a hybrid player. He's a wide receiver first who also can play running back. And on top of that, you had Kyle Pitts at tight end eligibility in fantasy football and called a tight end in real football who's lining up as a wide receiver more often than he's lining up as a tight end and doing more wide receiver duties than tight end duties. But if you look at the targets, you go, oh, yeah, the target shifted to the tight end. The target shifted to the running back. No, they shifted to two hybrid players that will not be something you'll be able to recreate on any other team in the league unless you have two hybrid players involved. So even the statistics, when we look back at them and we say, aha, this makes a lot of sense, it doesn't always make sense because each player that had a contribution to that is a little bit different. So this whole vacated targets, oh, this is easy. Oh, the vacated targets are all going to go to Dalton Schultz with Dallas because we're not going to have their starting wide receiver for, you know, Gallup isn't going to be out there for several games. And, oh, Tolbert's a rookie. Jamar Chase was a rookie last year. How did it work for him not getting? He got plenty of targets. So just calling a guy a rookie, who knows what a rookie's going to be able to do? But again, just because the tight end is a veteran doesn't mean that those targets are going to go to the tight end. Maybe more of the target share goes to CeeDee Lamb, and he becomes a Davante Adams-like target, you know, thief with a high percentage of targets. It's impossible to know and predict because even from year to year, what your data has shown us is that even when teams don't have injuries, they have changes in how those targets are distributed.
Yeah, and I was just looking at Atlanta. Just the running backs went up in comparing 21 to 20 when they had Ridley. It was 9% up, 11% for the tight end, and a minus 20% down for the wide receiver. So they shifted, as you say, to Pitts and Patterson. And remember, Hurst was there as well collecting. So they had a traditional tight end as well to collect in the red zone. So they kind of had a double punch there, and that's where they shifted. And so when you look at that, you know, it's after the fact. We're tricked. You know, it's Monday morning quarterback. It's the whole bias concept. I look at this and it's like, oh, this is obviously because, and it's not that clear sometimes. And even if it looks clear at the time when Ridley first got hurt that week, that hour after he found out, could you have predicted Cordarrelle Patterson was going to go on a run or Pitts was just going to be dink and dunk and catch all because he didn't get a lot of touchdowns, but that kind of thing. In other words, there's a lot of variation that occurs normally. And I think when I look at, and I was talking to Dennis, showing the maximum and minimum from 2013 to 2021, the running backs, we had some teams over the last nine years had running backs getting 46% of the target was the high in 2013. And guess what? The low was last year, the maximum at 26. So that's 20 percentage points extreme. The minimum that teams we found was 8%. And last year, the lowest in the league was 13%. So 13% was the low and 26% was the high. So we're talking almost, what is that, 13%. That's a lot of targets there, just how things, you know, happen. So what is a vacated target? How does that fit with that normal variation? And it's not clear at all. And I'm not sure, it's not going to be player or team specific and may even be unpredictable. And I'm not convinced when people claim things, you know, because I they're never going to tell you the variation, because they don't they either don't know it, or they know it, they're trying to tell you an article and not tell you the variation. And the scary thing should be, wow, you mean I'm playing in a game that has a lot of variation? Yes, and uncertainty. We don't know everything. We'll never know everything. And so we're playing in a minefield and we don't even know where all the mines are at. So that's, I guess, the fun of this. To me, it's the fun, but it kind of sounds scary to some, I guess.
And that's why you have to do more data research, like is done in the data lab each and every week. Head over to scienceoffantasyfootball.com. Look for the professor's lessons and articles and my articles, and you'll get even more out of our process and how we are dissecting the data. And hurry on back here next week at For Frequency's Sake for another edition of the Data Lab. For the Professor John Bush, this is Dennis Michelson thanking you so much for joining us. Come on back again next week.
Okay, folks, get to work.